Faust, and you are listening to Mental Health Insights. So this is going to be an episode that will be a continuation of our addiction series. Today we're actually going to be talking about heroin. Now, unless you have not been privy to any type of news or anything, the opioid crisis and epidemic is upon us in the United States here. And there are a lot of good reasons for that, with prescription painkillers and just with how strong this drug is in general. And instead of getting more into that, I'm just going to talk to you about how it works, why it's so intense, just to kind of give you a little bit of idea. So while I'm going to be talking about heroin specifically, I'm also going to talk about other opiates and opioids as well. That way, I want it to be more of a general discussion rather than specifically just about heroin, even though that is the most well-known name that this kind of thing goes by. So first things first, opiates are derived from the poppy plant, right? And it was discovered early on that they have certain properties. So we know that most drugs, they impact us by how they affect our brain, or they're able to tap into certain parts of our brain, then opiates are no different. So with our brain, we have this internal network, and just to kind of simplify it, let's just call it our like internal opiate system, our opioid receptors. And what these receptors will do is our body creates its own internal neurotransmitters that will tap into these receptors. So your brain will create a type of opiate on its own on a very base level to communicate with these receptors. And this can activate different places in the pleasure center, your ability to feel pain or regulate emotion or relaxation or anything like that, which would explain a lot that whenever people use different opiates, they will feel a sense of relaxation, even a sense of like euphoria or pleasure or anything like that. Of course, a pain or numbing sensation as well, because it's able to tap into that system. So heroin is such a dangerous drug for many different reasons. But one of the first is that it's inconsistent in the way that it is made. So while I would encourage you, if you're curious about how it's made or any type of history or anything, I know there's a couple good documentaries and Drugs Incorporated about heroin that I'd feel free to go and watch that. I'm going to focus primarily about how it's working in the brain. So as soon as you consume the opiate and it goes into your bloodstream, it'll pass the blood-brain barrier, and it will start to affect the first things that will happen is as it's tapping into that system. It is a broad spectrum. So in other words, there is no way for us to specifically make sure that the opiate only affects one area. So just like most drugs, it'd be really nice if we could make sure that drugs only affect one different area of the brain, but it's kind of a blanket effect. So it will depress the body. Opiates are depressant, which means that your breathing will slow down and your heart rate will slow down. Your blood pressure will normally drop because of the nature of the depressant. This is actually one of the reasons why it becomes so dangerous, is because it can be such an overwhelming calm or an overwhelming depressant that your heartbeat may get so slow that you're not able to get enough oxygen to different parts of your body and mainly your brain. And or besides that, your breathing may not be enough. You may just not be taking in enough oxygen. So you will slowly die due to oxygen deprivation. And if you don't, sometimes you can, can result in brain damage just due to not getting enough oxygen because of how powerful the depressant is. So going back, it is affecting different areas of your brain. Like I said, as it passes through the blood-brain barrier, and since it's a depressant, it is affecting the body in that way. I think that one of the first things that people will notice as they're consuming any type of opiate, and what they're primarily used for in the medical field, is to block pain. All right. So your ability to feel pain or any type of feelings of that sort will be diminished, and which is usually a good thing whenever opiates are being administered. It will also cause different types of hormone releases and a general feeling of well-being because it's affecting our different limbic responses, like I said, our hormone regulation, and even like the pleasure center of our brain, because it is wide arcing. And it'll attach to these different receptors just like the internal opiates that we have. So the brain is not able to distinguish between those, and the challenge is that it's a lot more, right? It's a lot more intense, and that's why it causes the effects that it does. And with heroin in particular, a lot of the challenges is that since it is created and it is often not pure, you will have different contaminants that are going to enter your body. So people can take these types of drugs in many different ways. They take it orally in like a form of like a pill or a tablet, which is usually how it's administered whenever you go to the doctor's office if you were to get a prescribed opiate. Or you can snort it, you could smoke it, and you can also inject it, which I believe most people kind of assume whenever people are talking about using heroin. But that isn't the only way that you might use heroin or different types of opiates. In fact, a lot of times whenever people start taking any type of opiate, it might be through snorting or smoking. And then slowly as your tolerance gets, you gain a tolerance to opiates very, very, very quickly. And as you gain a tolerance, you need more and more to get the same effect. So it becomes more and more appealing to eventually start to inject it, kind of like a getting more bang for your buck type of deal. And the problem is that with injecting, you're getting all that hits your system without any type of filtering. Whereas if you'll snort it or if you'll take it orally or anything, you will lose some of it just through your body breaking it down. And so it all won't hit your system as intensely. So whenever you get someone that are using these different drugs and they become more and more intense, heroin is one of the most addictive drugs that we know of. And that is simply because of not only the system that it's tapping into, our opiate system, but also because of the large amounts of dopamine that get released in the pleasure center of our brain. All right, so like we talked about before in the addiction series, in Addiction Basics, and I believe in Addiction Basics Part 2, is how dopamine is such an important neurochemical that gets transmitted that makes us feel good. It creates a positive reinforcement, so we want to continue doing that behavior over and over, and in this case, that is using that drug. So it becomes very dangerous because of large amounts of dopamine that is being moved. And like I said, our tolerance our body can become adjusted to using so much of this opiate that it becomes very easy for someone to start using more and more at a rapid pace. Now, if we are talking about other types of opiates that have really hit the scene, then we want to talk about fentanyl. So there will be times where people will think that they may be getting heroin, but it actually is in fact fentanyl. And fentanyl is just a much, much stronger version of the opiate, and a lot of times it is several thousand times stronger than heroin, which makes it much more lethal, makes it much more dangerous, and makes your tolerance go up even more. So you can have fentanyl that could be added to heroin, or mixed and matched in different ways, and that's one of the things that risk overdose so much, is that you have no idea how potent, what you're getting is. So let's say, for instance, it's called a bean that you may get. Let's say that you get a bean and it's only 17% pure. I say only 17. If it's 17% pure, it's heroin, so it's still pretty intense. If it's 17% pure and you're taking that, and then all of a sudden the next one that you get is 50. That's a huge variation. It's going to impact your system very differently. And that's why people can overdose so easily on heroin. And one of the hard things about it is that whenever other heroin users hear that someone overdosed, they are likely to seek out that drug dealer that sold them that type of heroin or that type of opiate, because that means that it was strong. So the kind of gives you an idea of the extreme warping effect that ends up happening. The dependence on this drug is insane. The withdrawal can start as soon as a couple hours after you take your last dose, and the withdrawals are intense. While heroin withdrawals will not kill you, they will feel like they are killing you. You can be feverish, you can be shaking, your bones and teeth will hurt, your entire body can start to hurt after a while, and you can actually start to feel pain all over your body, which of course all of this, you know, reinforces using it even more to escape the pain. So eventually it starts out with pleasure and positive reinforcement to a negative reinforcement to avoiding getting more hurt or getting feeling more unpleasant or anything like that, which is why it can be so dangerous, not only because of how quickly someone can get hooked, but because of the different potencies. And, with people that may abuse pain pills, they do know how much is in it. But the hard thing is the tolerance gains so quickly that you can decide to take more pills and means more tolerant, and then it means you have higher withdrawals, which means you're taking more pills. So then it can also overwhelm your system. Heroin, like I said, different opiates are, they're all very similar in the way that they are interacting with us. So there's not a lot of ways to say that, what's safe or what's not. The main reason that things are less safe if they are gotten off the street, so to speak, would be because of the contamination effect. And of course, there are more versions that are more contaminated. For example, in the United States, we have a very strong heroin network. So usually people could get a fairly decent heroin here. Whereas in other countries, especially third world countries where that supply may not be as readily available, then you can get different variations called crocodile, which basically means that more additives have been combined to it, and it can be more toxic to the body, and it can actually start eroding the veins and breaking down the body tissue even faster than normal heroin might, which of course is extremely dangerous. So even more dangerous than just traditional heroin. The bottom line is that heroin is a really dangerous thing. A lot of times whenever you overdose, it is due to lack of oxygen. If you see someone that has overdosed, you'll likely see their skin will have distorted color. It'll look like they're turning blue or black. They won't be breathing as much. Their pupils will not respond to light whenever you shine it in their eyes. And they will have to be administered what's called Narcan, which is a much more easily accessible drug than it used to be. And basically what that does is it will attach to your opiate receptors, and it will stop the drug from continuing to hit those opiate receptors. So it kind of stops it, the chemical interaction in our brain, from happening. It's a wonderful, wonderful development as far as that is, and it has saved many lives. And of course, there's a lot of difficulty around that, because even if someone's hit with Narcan, you're still going through the withdrawals, and you're still having different challenges with that. And there's been different medications that have been developed because of that, like naloxone. Which is something that is an opiate blocker and can even inhibit you from getting intoxicated. I think it's also called Vivitrol as well. And those are pretty effective drugs for that. Suboxone is basically a lower grade opiate, you can get high off of Suboxone too. So it's not really a perfect type of treatment for opiate addiction. And then you can get one other type of treatment, which is like a methadone treatment, which is just slowly tapering off opiates. So usually because of how intense opiate is, methadone treatment, Suboxone treatment, definitely not as effective, more effective than nothing. But whenever you get into like the naloxone and Vivitrol, those are definitely more effective treatments. You can't actually get high off it whenever those things are in your system. However, you can still overdose, so it is still dangerous to use no matter what. And like I said, once you are overdosing, the only thing that can stop you from overdosing is Narcan. And a lot of different health insurances can cover you getting Narcan from the pharmacy. So if you know someone that has an opiate addiction, or especially someone in your family, or if you have a child or anything, I would encourage you to go to, you know, whatever your local pharmaceutical store is. You can see if your insurance benefits cover it. That way you can have that just in case. And I think that, sorry, I got kind of a little sidelined even just talking about that. But so long-term effects of heroin use can become pretty devastating as well. So like most type of drugs, it will reduce white matter in the brain, which will impair decision making. A lot of times whenever you have heroin use, the effect that happens over time and long term are not as easily reversed as other drugs that might be able to, which creates even more difficulty. And the imbalances that happen in your hormone system are also harder to reverse and revert back to normal. So in your stress response, your ability to regulate your own behavior, those types of things, it's harder for your body and your brain to go back to what would be called like a baseline, where you'd have more control over that, which is one of the reasons why whenever heroin use, opiate abuse or anything like that is detected, you want to seek treatment right away. And or if you know someone, then you want them to seek treatment right away, especially because they will not be as motivated to do that. There's a huge stigma around addiction and heroin addiction in particular, which makes it even more and more deadly, you know, as far as seeking help and treatment, even though there are so many resources available. The availability of it, the stigma, and the intensity of the withdrawal symptoms make it really hard to seek any type of help, which means that other people, you know, in a life that may know a heroin addict, if you're able to step up and you feel comfortable doing that and helping them, that'd be a huge boon. Now, it makes it hard because whenever someone is addicted to something like heroin, it can become costly fairly quickly, which means they can easily ostracize different family members or anything like that because they may be stealing from them or deceitful or anything like that. Or they're hiding it really well, so like a break of trust or anything like that. Those are all very common with addiction to this type of drug, and it makes it really hard because social support normally isn't there. Which makes it, again, that's one of the things that makes it so deadly and why it's considered one of the most deadly drugs. Even though there may be other drugs that kill more people, overall, this is considered a very deadly drug because of how many people that start heroin use and actually end up dying from it. Whereas other types of drugs that are really deadly, such as alcohol, one of the most deadly drugs in the world, most people that may use it don't actually end up dying from it. Heroin is not the case with heroin at all. So seeking any type of help for someone that has heroin use, even if you are searching something like Narcotics Anonymous, there are specific meetings called Heroin Anonymous because, like I said, there is a stigma with heroin use, and that's even among other addicts. And a lot of times when you go to those meetings, you can find people that understand it a little more and they could be a little more empathetic towards someone that is going through that type of addiction. So whenever you're talking about getting support for a heroin user, a complete restructure of how they spend their time is definitely needed, along with possible medication intervention or a probable medication intervention. And that's where you'd want to make sure that they have a lot of social support. They're, you know, they're going to different groups. They're make sure they're working. They're keeping busy, and their time is filled, right? So having different meeting options, like going to Narcotics Anonymous, Heroin Anonymous, or Alcoholics Anonymous, or whatever it may be, And they're able to go to those meetings and they're able to get a sponsor, someone that can check in on them, or they're in a treatment facility full of professionals that are watching over them. That way they can gain a little bit of sober time under their belt and they can break some of the behavioral patterns, and the addiction can start to get a little weaker as they find other coping mechanisms to help level themselves off. Since that is one of the main dangers with any type of drug, is that it becomes easy to go to it because it becomes an ingrained habit and thus an addiction towards it. And having the extra social support is shown to be crucial in helping people through that type of process. And a lot of times whenever people pass away, it's because they just don't have a very strong social network that can help them and help them stay engaged in their treatment or anything like that. I want to talk about two more things with heroin. And the whenever people get to any type of injection use of heroin or fentanyl or any type of opiate, really, there becomes another danger, and that's contracting like HIV or AIDS or anything like that because of the needle use and sharing of the needle use. That is why a lot of countries or states or anything like that may implement where you kind of have safe harbor or a safe place to use those types of injection type drugs to stop the spreading of that. But it's still a pretty common thing. It's still a pretty dangerous thing having and using dirty needles around that, which is why it can become such a health disaster and health related issue. The final thing that I want to mention in regards to heroin use is the importance of someone that uses heroin or abuses other type of opiates being extremely careful or going to a lifestyle of complete abstinence from any type of drugs. See, the challenge is that if you use any type of drugs that are dopamine manipulating, and they manipulate enough dopamine, the brain will then recall how it felt on heroin, especially whenever you get drugs that are very similar in sensation. For example, alcohol is usually a big trigger for different heroin addicts. And of course, other types of drugs can be the same way, where the brain will start to compare how was this to heroin. And since heroin has such a profound effect, not many other drugs compare, which makes staying clean from heroin so difficult. And that's why it is so important for there to be support and ongoing recovery options after someone has used any type of heroin. So I hope that, my goal of this episode was just to raise a little bit of awareness of how it works in the body and why it can become so addictive, and just to understand a little bit of some of the components behind heroin addiction. Not that it's very different than other types of addiction, but it is very deadly because of how intense, how available heroin is, and how quickly it can escalate from possibly smoking, snorting, and then to injection, which the risk factor just amplifies by the time that you get to injection. And then most of your time and effort has to be spent towards that, which means that relationships, work, cognitive functioning is all starting to suffer. And that makes it really hard and that's one of the reasons that the death rate is so high. And there are a lot of medical interventions that are present now that are more and more helpful. And even in the future, right, we're looking forward to the development of an opiate that can be prescribed by doctors that it does not give you any type of pleasure. It doesn't activate the pleasure center of the brain. That's something that's been in development for a while. It's a really difficult thing to do. But hopefully in our lifetime, we will have access to that where, if you go in for a surgery, you may be prescribed some type of opiate and not feel great from taking it, but able to block the pain and discomfort from whatever surgery, operation, or disorder or condition that you may have, which would be a huge boon. But that's the future, and right now we got to contend with some of the issues that are at hand and some of the challenges really that are at hand with opiate use and addiction. And of course, if you have any questions about that, feel free to reach out at craig@lifecarecounselingstl.com. That's craig@lifecarecounselingstl.com. I'd love to answer any questions around this, especially since a lot of times if someone that you love is going through addiction, but specifically heroin addiction, any type of information is good. And if there's anything I didn't cover this podcast that you're wondering about, you know, I'd love to be able to speak with you about it so that you know a little bit about it. There are a lot of great resources in the St. Louis area for those that are suffering from addiction. And finding those resources is an important thing, and especially because so many of those resources can be low cost or free. So, again, I hope that this episode was helpful for you, and I look forward to the next one in our addiction series. I believe I've been having people talk to me about it. They want me to talk about nicotine dependence and Juul, so I'll talk about that. I know that before then I have a couple other group podcasts that we're going to be talking about. We have all kinds of different topics that are coming your guys' way and will hopefully prove just as helpful to you as well. If there is a specific topic that you maybe want me to cover in the mental health arena, please let me know. A lot of these topics that I'm talking about are topics because I'm interested in them or have colleagues that are interested in talking with them. And I am open to anything that you might feel is helpful, right? So if you have a certain question, like maybe around the social anxiety, or if you have certain thoughts or questions about trauma that we haven't covered, or even just around you know, neurotypical versus atypical type of brains, or you know, anything like that that you feel that would be better for you to understand and you'd like a professional to talk to you about it and simplify it so that it's easier to understand, and you know, it'd be my pleasure to do that for you. And just let me know, right? Again, craig@lifecarecounselingstl.com. And I look forward to talking to you guys during our next episode. Until then, have a good one. Thank you for listening to our show. This podcast is designed to provide accurate and reliable information, and those that appear on the show are all licensed professionals in the area of mental health counseling. We are in no way rendering legal or medical advice, only information to help serve you better in making decisions in your life. If you need a professional, you should find one. The music you are listening to is called Lobby Time, and that is by Kevin MacLeod and licensed through Creative Commons.